Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do. I'll start.
All right, hang on a minute. Let me get my
mic check. Are we checked?
We are close to checked.
I had an espresso a minute ago, finished it.
I know, didn't have the evidence of it.
Yeah.
All right, welcome.
Hey. Okay. Take two?
Yeah, tell them that story.
So Jeff and I, it's Tuesday afternoon. It's looks like it's getting close to 5 o'clock. We started at 4. We got about 30 minutes into a podcast and realized it just wasn't very good.
Yeah. I mean, it was terrible. We didn't know where we were going.
Had no idea. So we scrapped it. It'll never be heard or seen. Yep. So this is take two on the same day.
Yeah. Of a totally different topic.
Of a totally different podcast. Yeah. And I need to apologize to start this one probably because last week I was complaining with our podcast office sharers, Kinsey and Sarah,
right,
because they do a podcast from this location. Kinsey messed up my mic, as she always does, and I have to readjust it, which is really a pain in the ass. And so, but it turns out it wasn't Kinsey that was doing that.
Right.
Because Jeff thought he knew who sat where on the podcast, but he was incorrect.
Yeah, yeah.
He being you were incorrect. So this is Sarah.
Yeah.
Sarah, stop jacking with my mic. Put it back like it was, okay?
And if Sarah here, she'd say, Steve.
Yeah, put my mic back the way it was. Yeah.
No, she'd say, watch my podcast and you'll know which side I sit on.
Right. So I guess that's probably lesson one. I need to watch the podcast.
Even if you don't watch our podcast, Steve, we still love you. That's what Steve and Kinsey would say.
That is not true.
That's exactly what they would say.
They would, but they'd be lying. They don't love me as much. They'd love me more if I watched the podcast. All right, I'm going to watch it now.
All right.
All
right. Here we go. Round two.
All right. You said something a minute ago, and I thought it was an interesting term. I don't know fully what it means, but I'm sure you'll explain it, and I thought it could be the topic of a good conversation.
Okay,
so
let's try it.
You talked about the word you use in your office a lot called reframing.
Oh, yeah.
So give a little context to that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, over the last few years, that I find myself speaking that word a couple times a week. It seems like someone will come in, they'll be talking about a situation that they're going through that's really difficult, and how, you know, maybe I don't see a way forward, or why this happened, or there's nothing good that's going to come out of this, or this feels so heavy right now. And I'll find myself sometimes saying, hey, let's just pause for a minute. You know, tell me the narrative that you're believing about what's happened. And usually they'll take a minute and they'll pretty concisely say, well, it seems like, and then they'll tell me, you know, money's never going to be okay again. Or since I lost that job, I'm not going to be able to accomplish this goal. Or since we've gone through this in our marriage, we're not going to be able to enjoy this. And then I'll just say, hey, what if we reframe that narrative? Is there a way that you could look at that story and maybe just find a little different perspective on it? And I think there's been something fun when they start doing it and you know, they'll kind of get stuck telling the same story that we're telling the first time. I'll say, okay, and maybe there's another way for it to happen. Or they'll say, well, this has happened. I'll go, okay, yes, and I think sometimes words like, well, maybe, or words like, and, can begin to reframe our story where we can look and say, maybe it's not all bad. Maybe there's something good that could come out of what I'm in the middle of as well. So for me, reframing is really just a way of pausing and going, okay, this feels like it's catastrophic. Is there something I can learn from this? Is there something that can be a new beginning for me?
Yeah. And is it catastrophic?
Yeah.
And why?
Yeah. Right. Right.
How do we get the frames in order to reframe something? It's framed, you know, the assumption is it's framed already in your brain.
Yeah.
How do we get those frames of our lives and our experiences?
Yeah. I wonder, you know, top of my head when you say that, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is I think past experiences so much inform how we interpret immediate reality. You know?
That's a good phrase.
I kind of like it. I've never said it.
Say it again.
Yeah.
Can you remember it all?
Maybe past experiences tend to inform how we define immediate reality. You know, I think there is something about that where, you know, if I can't think of a good example off the top of my head. You know, if I grew up in a family where there was dad who was always super quiet and didn't engage when things got difficult and kind of got small and pulled back. And then, you know, in a marriage relationship, and you know, if I'm the wife and I'm looking at my husband and he's getting small and he's pulling back, well, I may be what my brain's going to tell me is, oh, there he goes again. He's disappearing. He's not going to show up. He doesn't care. Because that's how we learned to interpret that dad's silence, was that he didn't care. But sometimes we may need to reframe that. And the reframing may be going, okay, we're in kind of a heated moment right now. And I'm mad. I'm talking to my husband this way. And he's getting quiet and he's pulling back. Huh. Wonder why he's doing that. And with curiosity, as I engage that, I may discover, gosh, what he's really doing is he's just saying, I don't want to say something stupid. I don't want to overreact right now. I'm trying to measure my words. And we begin reframing, going, oh, in that moment, his silence is actually a gift to me. It's not that he's disengaging, doesn't care, he's becoming apathetic. He's really trying to be more thoughtful. Again, I think that's where the framing comes from. At least one of the first places is, well, this is what my past experience has taught me about this moment or this decision or this relationship.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because I can think of times in our marriage where there would be, you know, my own, Jen would have a phrase, she would say some phrase, and it would trigger an insecurity. And so my immediate reaction is, hey, she's trying to,
right,
she's trying to say this, and she just won't say it. Well, not necessarily true.
Right.
You know, she was just reacting to what was happening. What it triggered in me was something, was that original frame that may not be that great, or may not be accurate.
Maybe a little warped, the original frame.
It could be very warped.
It's interesting. I talk about this sometimes. I think you and I may have even talked about this on here before, but, you know, all of us, you know, we're born in these families that they, I use these two words, they form us and they deform us. You know, we've talked about this, I think. And, you know, they do great things that help develop us and grow us and teach us how to relate in certain ways. But then all of us are raised by, you know, human mom and dads that, you know, do some boneheaded things just like I did, just like you did as parents, right? So there's places where they deform us. In other words, where the frame gets warped, to use our word for today. And so there's just this sense of going, oh my gosh, I don't know how to handle that situation, because I'm kind of, something's bent there. But I think when I think about reframing is taking the places where we've been formed and deformed and begin to allowing some reforming or transforming to happen to them. You know, there's places where I just need to go, gosh, the way I respond to somebody confronting me and get defensive, well, okay, I need to reframe that. Why do I have to hear it as defensiveness? Another word I use a lot in my office is the word stick. You know, like when I see marriages going through conflict and the husband will start to name call, or the wife will, you know, well, you're just always judging. You know, generally if one spouse says, you're just judging me, the other one's response is, no, I'm not. Why are you attacking me? And we're off in this crazy cycle. We all have been in it at some level. But when I can live in a place where I don't let words stick, this is hard, but it's doable. When I can not let words stick and my spouse says, well, there you go, you're just judging me again. If I can let those words not stick and I don't feel the need to be defensive to them, in effect, I'm reframing and just say, wow, well, tell me more about that. I'm not trying to judge. What are you hearing that feels judgmental right now? And so sometimes it's going, I'm not going to let your judgment or your words about me stick. I'm going to stay present in the moment. And I'm going to say, well, wait, tell me, I want to understand that more. Or tell me more about that, because I'm hearing you say something that I don't think I agree with, but I value you. I'm reframing. Value you. So tell me more.
Right. And maybe I didn't mean it that way.
Right. But if you heard it that way, that matters to me. Let's clean the mess up of how it was heard.
Yeah.
And then let's get back to the actual conversation at hand.
Yeah.
But we get so derailed when we stay in the old frame. Well, I know what that meant. I know why you said that. You know?
Do you still get triggered like that?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. This weekend. Yeah. Laura and I were watching the grandbabies, and we have always parented so differently. Our parenting styles, I mean, duh, you know?
For example.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I can't think of a handful of times that Laura has been dysregulated with the kids and demonstrably expressed it. You know, she's just even. She's amazing at that. You know, my story is pretty opposite of that. You know, like I would get big. I would get harsh. I mean, disproportionately so. I would, hey, you need to go to your room right now. You know, it was immediate behavioral control is kind of my MO or my go-to.
Right.
Where Laura was, it was more about maintaining the connection and the relationship. And so this weekend with the grandkids, we had an interaction. I won't bore you with all the details, but where Laura saw me as being too harsh with one of the grandkids. I felt really regulated. I felt like I was really aware of what I was doing, but I felt like I was very firm. I was very direct. And I gave him a command because I felt like I need to take him away from the situation because it's escalating between a couple siblings. And it was interesting because I just read Laura's body language and I could feel that thing rising up in me. Like, there she goes again. You know, I was so ticked at her, you know, and it led to a lot of conversation this weekend that I think has been productive of Laura's need to speak up more quickly to me, but my continued need to realize that, man, that old frame is still there. You know, that if she's trying to give me, the way Laura would say it, and I think it's fair, she would say, I feel like at times I try to give you feedback on something, but you're just saying I'm judging you. Well, if that's true, in those moments when it is true, when I do that, I mean, I've got her in a frame that's probably connected to my mom, and it can be difficult for me to break out of that because now I'm just sure that she's judging me instead of going, she saw something, she has a different perspective, she's trying to offer that to me.
Yeah.
That's hard to get to sometimes.
Yeah, that's hard to.
Especially when there's a history that, you know, we got 38 years of marriage together.
Right.
There's moments that she's been great at, there's moments she's not been great. Moments I've not been great, and more moments I've not been great. So, you know, that's part of the memory that keeps a score.
Right. Well, and as a good friend of mine says, nobody likes to be wrong.
I know. Yeah. Well, that's where our defensiveness comes from, right?
Right. We don't want to be wrong, realize we've made mistakes, and it's tough to swallow, especially if it's, you know, something behavioral with, you know, your grandkids that
right.
you love.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I'm not saying you are wrong, but.
Well, it's easier to say I am because it's probably going.
When was the last time you were wrong? Like 1980s?
Percentage odds is that it's probably going to be me being wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, so step outside of my office, though, on the whole concept of reframing.
Okay.
You know, as an athlete, even in the season of life, when you
are we going to bring an athlete in?
Yeah, we're going to find one.
Okay.
No, but this
tune in the next episode for the reframing from an athlete's perspective.
What was the meme I saw the other day? It was some guy who played for the Bulls back in the Jordan era, and I won't get the numbers right, but the point will be made. It said
we both scored for 35,000 points.
Yeah, 35,000 points. For that year was like, or his whole career was like 3 points. Anyway, but golf. I mean, the way you talk about the golf course and when you're playing that game, that reframing is crucial. It sounds like.
And it is, and it's, again, we've got the guy that owns the course I play with is a mutual friend of ours, and he is a great thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And I love talking about golf with him because he sees it as a metaphor for life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's and a lot of sports are. Sports can be, you know, art, drama, music, they can all be that.
But right.
This is the one, you know, you asked me about. So, because the thing about golf is when you watch golf on TV or celebrity tournaments, you see musicians, ex-athletes, everybody's out there drawn to it because it's so incredibly hard and you're standing out there by yourself. And so when you swing the club and the ball doesn't go anywhere, it goes directly right. Or the embarrassment is, I mean, it's palpable.
Yeah.
And you have nowhere to go. There's nowhere to hide. And you know you're going to have to go hit another shot. And the funny thing I've noticed about golfers, I picked it up late in life, so I wish I would have learned it younger, but it's an incredibly hard game. I've gotten better, but I can still hit just some totally horrendous shots.
Mm.
And, you know, the funny thing about listening to guys that play golf or women that play, anybody that plays golf, is, you know, on the 19th hole, when we're all at the pub, reliving our rounds either in glory or misery.
Right.
It's never, I hit a bad shot on 18. It's like, oh my God, I'm such an idiot. I hit it in the water on 18. I am a miserable person and I don't deserve to live. You know, that's the sentiment. So it's just, man, and you have to, but part of the appeal is during the round, you kind of have to know what's coming. And one of the things I've learned from this guy and from other guys I've played with that are really good is they turn their brain off.
Wow. Yep.
Like the old saying in football, a cornerback has to have a short memory. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be able to get over the sting of that shot and grind on the next one.
Mm-hmm. But that's reframing, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. That one shot doesn't define me.
Right.
Right.
Right. And even if it continues all day, but there's times as I've gotten better, I know my round can turn around now. And I know it can go from good to bad. I mean,
yeah,
had a really good round going in the club championship last year and got to the 18th hole and it's over water and I had three balls in the water and had a 10 on the hole. Well, that'll, you know,
that'll change the game.
That'll beat the hell out of your good round right there, you know? And so, but I thought, you know, I've learned as I've gotten better, I've learned how to reframe that a little bit mm-hmm. and go, you know what? I hit it really good today mm-hmm. and I had a bad hole on an area of my game that I need to work on anyway.
Yeah.
And it just, the old ugly showed up and that your weaknesses show up under pressure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, you got a chance the next day to come back and make it right. And I played really mediocre the next day. So my reframing needs to, I need to work on a little bit, but yeah, sports is all about reframing.
Yeah.
I think.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. I love the quarterback example of when he throws the bad pass, the interception, short memory, got to go again.
And, you know, one of the reasons I was really glad that my kids played sports and encouraged them to do that was because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll hear phrases in sports that don't make any sense. Like, you know, sometimes you'll hear that about a quarterback. Hey, I just want them to manage the game. Well, you're always managing the game, but you also have to make plays and mm-hmm. do what you're designed to do mm-hmm. and be really good at what you do.
Yeah.
That's going to help your team win. It's all about, I think when people say manage the game in that context, they're meaning don't make a mistake.
Right.
But time is ticking right now while we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't allow you to go back.
Right.
And so you've got to move forward. You can't worry about making a mistake. You have to play.
Yeah.
And good players in any sport, good musicians will tell you, I'm not thinking about G, then E, then H, as I play the guitar, my brain's off and I'm going because mm-hmm. they're so good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the rest of us aren't that good, but the example still applies.
Mm-hmm.
Life is always moving forward. And so if you're not reframing and moving forward, if you're cautious in that.
We're stuck in that old frame, right?
You never get out of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a powerful picture, I think, of what happens with our failures is that we have a self-talk sometimes that it like reinforces the frame. It like puts another layer of wood around the frame and it holds us in close. And suddenly the narrative becomes, well, I am a failure. I've screwed up again. I see this, whether it's a man or woman battling some area of addictive behavior. And, you know, they get sober for a season from whatever. And then they have a slip, they mess up. And then suddenly like, oh my gosh, I suck again. Kind of like the bad golf shot, you know?
Yeah.
But it becomes then too big. It almost like reinforces. And so now that warped frame kind of holds them in this place where this narrative tells them that, you're defined by your failure.
Yeah.
And you know, I think one of the phrases I love to remind myself is my failure doesn't define me.
Right.
You know, my failure actually can be one of the most powerful and hopeful things that happen to me if I learn from it and use it, again, to reframe whatever that topic is. I don't care if it's the way I interact with the child, the way I interact with my wife, the way I try to close a business deal, whatever it is. If I can see my failure as, oh, that's just part of being human. I'm not going to do everything perfectly.
Yeah.
So now how do I look at my failure, kind of do an autopsy of it, dissect it, understand what happened. How do I grow from it? To me, that's part of the whole reframing thing is, hey, okay, that wasn't good, but here's what I need to do in that situation that would look differently in the future.
More like you're looking at it as a third party consultant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, here's all the data. Mm-hmm. And so let's make a decision, you know, and I realized that I've had to do some of that in business because I think my tendency is I like new startup things.
Right.
I like scaling in business. I like new opportunities. Even when I'm working on newer real estate deals versus ones that have been in the, you know, in the churn for a long time,
mm-hmm.
I can take my eye off those.
Mm.
And sometimes I'll know intuitively, man, I need to call this person or that person, or I need to get in the middle of this problem and help solve it. But I know my natural tendency is, it's going to work out.
Right.
And I'll go on to the new shiny object.
Right.
But I've had to learn how to reframe that and go, no, I'm needed here. Needed here. I got to pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. Another example is I think my daughter called earlier today, and she's gotten into running too. And so she's starting to run. She's called and told me that she'd been, you know, working out and did a little running. And she said, you know, I've always told myself over the years, she's had some stomach issues and some health issues over the years that sometimes will, you know, debilitate her a little bit for three or four or five days at a time. And so she's an Enneagram 8. Mm. And so she would say this, she said this today, when she starts working out our program, it's full on.
I'm sure.
And when she stops, the world has collapsed and it'll never be the same and I'll never be able to work out again, you know? And she said, I've learned how to just go, you know what? No, I just took 4 days off because I didn't feel great. And now I'm starting up again, starting up again. I'm just picking up where I left off.
Yeah.
And so she's reframing that conversation in her own head, which I don't think at 23, I was really able to do very well at anything.
I remember a couple episodes ago, we were talking about kind of the fitness stuff we were talking about. And I said some phrase like, my relationship with eating healthy has been just a bunch of false starts. And do you remember your response?
I don't think that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. You said, yeah. And there's been some really good successes too.
You've had periods where you've lost a ton of weight.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was a reframe moment because, again, my shame speaks. Well, it's been a litany of failures or whatever I said, right? Instead of being able to go, well, no, I have failed. And every one of those failures, I've learned. And I'm stepping in a better direction from those failures. And I think that's what life ultimately is. It's this long. There was a book years ago I read, and I loved the title. And it was a long obedience in the same direction, mouthful of words. But the whole point of it is that life is this long journey. And if we're ultimately, you know, think trend line of stock market or anything, if we're ultimately moving up and to the right, even though there's, you know, peaks and valleys, you know, gosh, then it's how do I just keep walking that long obedience concept of how do I just keep doing the next right thing, even when I failed? How do I get back up and swing the club on the next hole? You know, how do I reframe that? Yeah, 16 sucked, but 17 can be better. What just happened with you?
I was thinking about something.
Yeah.
When you said that, I was thinking the next right thing. One of my buddies, former business partner, said that to me years ago. Because I can get stuck.
Yeah.
In the... trying to think of the way that's say this the right way. The kind of business that I'm in, the amount of things that can go wrong can be overwhelming.
Oh, I imagine.
And so if they all hit on the same day, sometimes I can get in just a hole, just stuck. And he and I were working together years ago, and he said, he looked at me in the office and goes, hey, just do the next right thing, which is an AA phrase. And, but man, it was, I don't care where it's from. It was appropriate. And I've stuck with that. I've got it. I keep it in my wallet.
Yeah.
Do the net just. And so when I get stuck in my head, even, you know, it's relationally or with my kids or my wife, sometimes the next right thing is just go say, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm really pissed off right now.
Yeah.
But we'll get through it. Give me a little bit of time. Yeah. I've had to say that to my kids countless times.
Yeah.
And obviously I've had to say it to my wife or even people in business. Hey man, I should have called you on that. I didn't call. Mm-hmm. I let the email catch up, and that's a terrible way to find out about this. That's on me. And
yeah.
You know, but,
I love that though. Do the next right thing. Like for you, that's become almost like a mantra. Right. It's like, man, when I'm stuck, when I'm living in that old frame, when I need to reframe to use our word of the day, I need to do the next right thing.
It gets me out of the weeds. Not that I get in the weeds very often. I try to avoid the weeds and stay at a higher level.
But, are we talking golf or life?
Man, not golf. I can hit out of the rough with the best of them because I'm in it all the time.
You mentioned AA a second ago, and you know, the 12 step, our 12 step.
Did I? Mm-hmm. What are you saying?
that's not water. No, I'm kidding. No, but you know, I think the AA people are brilliant at learning to reframe. You know, you see somebody that goes, we'll use AA, SA, NA, any of them. You know, the crisis happens. You know, the world implodes and you decide I need help, and you finally show up and you go to a meeting and you're terrified and you just listen, and then you go to the second meeting and the third meeting, you get to know somebody and barely, and then you get a sponsor and you're doing great and you get your 30-day chip and you've been walking in sobriety, and you know I'm kicking butt and taking names. You know, the old timers, the guys who've been around the program, and the guys and the women, I'm sorry, who've been around the program, they're going to tell you, maybe you're kicking butt. Let's see. I got my 60-day. Good. Okay. We'll see. You know, day 72 or 92 or 142, you know, you fall off the wagon. You know, you drink again, you act out again, you do something stupid. That, especially that first time it happens, it's so devastating for so many people. They're just like, right. My gosh, what's wrong with me? And the shame cycle kicks in because now they're back in their old frame. I suck. I'm a failure. But one of the phrases I love from the 12-step world is they'll often talk about, no, what happened is you had a slip. Mm-hmm. Slip. S-L-I-P, a slip. It's not a catastrophic. Your life's not over. You're not done. You had a slip. And a slip, in their world, it's an acronym for sudden lapse in progress. Mm. A sudden lapse in progress.
God, that's so good.
I think about that with that book title, A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. Again, it's not perfect linear line straight.
Right.
And slips happen. And when they happen, I've got to be able to go, that's so not cool. I don't like that. And it's not the end of anything. How do I reframe? How do I get back working my program? We would say in the 12-step world, but how do I get back just moving forward, staying in that long, long, long road that eventually has me going in the direction that I long to be in.
That's good. That's good perspective.
Yeah. I like that word, that definition.
I think even the word slip, I think about this, I won't remember the number, but there's a psalm of Asaph, I think, where he says, Lord, help me, my feet are slipping.
Mm.
And I always think about that. Like, that's where I think I'm grounded, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm slipping.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that slip is all-encompassing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of
us. And we all do it.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just get. Some people's slips are easier to see than others.
Mm-hmm. Well, instead the other way, some of us are more masterful at hiding our slips than others.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know who I'm talking about.
I don't either. There's no mirror in here, so we're not looking. Well, I think that's part of the narrative. You and I talked about this on one of the first episodes. We grew up in a spiritual climate where there were no slips. You made a decision. You did a certain thing, and then you were good the rest of your life. That's the message, I think.
Yeah.
That's what I heard anyway. Mm-hmm. Maybe I didn't hear it correctly, but
no,
and so, you know, when you did slip, it was the end of the world.
Yeah.
And so having to reframe that as an adult.
I think it's what, you know, a lot of us growing up in that kind of space would look at our friends who didn't grow up in that kind of space. And we would just go, my gosh, why they're so irresponsible. What's wrong with them? No. You know, instead of realizing they were just living in a place of fully embracing, gosh, I'm human and I make good choices and make bad choices, but neither of them fully define me. To me, I wonder sometimes if that's a mark of growing up, of maturing well, is when we're able to go, you know, my worst moment doesn't define who I am. And my best moment doesn't define who I am.
Right.
You know, I live somewhere in the middle. You know, yeah, I've had some, we talk about parenting all the time. I've had some amazing moments as a role model father, be just like me. I've had other moments like I shared last week where, gosh, run as fast as you can, do just the opposite of whatever I do. Yeah,
me too.
But there's a middle ground where I just go, you know what? I think I've tried to walk reasonably in the same direction. And when I can reframe that and, you know, not let my highs be too high and be like, look how great I am, or my lows go, I suck, I'm the spawn of Satan, but be able to just go, I'm on the journey, I'm learning.
We talk about that a lot, and we've talked about that a lot over the years in our family, and I got a great piece of advice, and I don't remember who this was from, but I remember when I was doing a little basketball coaching, I'd read this thing that Rick Pitino said. He said, you've got 7 seconds. When you're talking to a kid, once your 7 seconds is up, they're not paying attention.
Wow.
So figure out what you want to say. And he said, and this was, of course, in the context of basketball, which is a fast-moving game. Change is not he said, you can't coach every play. Change is gradual. It's a video. It's not a snapshot. Mm. So when I was trying to teach my kids how to do things, I'll try to keep that in mind and share that with them. Hey, especially Caroline learning to play volleyball. Hey, how was that serve? How was that serve? And I said, hey, let's take 10 and let's look at that. Let's look at that video instead of each snapshot.
Wow.
And I thought that was good. I learned more about life and business from coaching than any other thing I've done in my life.
I bet so.
Just because of the things dawn on you in the middle of practice. And, yeah. You know, we can talk about that another day, but it was just a great experiences over the years. But that's true in marriage. It's true with friends. It's true with kids. As a human being, you're going to have a good moment, and you're going to have good moments, and you're going to have bad moments. And the majority's lived in between.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You know, I've never thought about what you just said. But that the comparison of the watch the video versus see the
picture.
The picture. You know, one of my things that I'm seeing in the sports world that sometimes drives me crazy is all the replays. You know, where we go back and we can replay it to the nanosecond of the fingernail that touched the ball when it was going out of bounds. I guess it's good, maybe ultimately, but the reality is life isn't lived that way. We don't get a chance to stop and go back and you know, and yet I think you're right. I think our tendency is to go, well, in that one frame, I was horrible, therefore I am. Instead of being able to go, I want to get out of that one frame, maybe I need to quit using reframing and say, hey, let's look at the video of that fight that y'all had in your marriage. Just don't look at just that one frame. Yeah, that was a horrible moment.
Because in that frame, you really were horrible.
Yeah, but there's a bigger context,
it's
right?
There's context. It's not the whole.
Yeah,
it's not the whole picture.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's, and I was, you know, and again, coaching, parenting. That's a lot of what I did. I think that I was good at is, hey, let's look at the progress you've made as a.
Yeah.
As a player for 3 years. And let's go by that's true. Was today a good day? No, it was not.
Yeah.
Okay. Both of those things can be true at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I heard an Enneagram seminar a few years ago, or maybe a podcast. It was about the Enneagram 6, which is my wife is, and what she is. And one of the encouragements, if you're married to a 6, is remind them of what's true. Mm. And that's been really good for us. Mm. I try to do it well. She's open to hear it. And sometimes she'll have a frame of a narrative of her life or her experience and will say something. And I said, babe, that's not true.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true. Yeah. Or is that true?
Yeah.
And we'll walk through and it's good for me to remember. And sometimes she'll do that to me. Hey, that's, mm-hmm. you've said something, you know. Like, I'm an idiot. Well, that's not true. Well, maybe it is sometimes.
But. Yeah. No, but that's what a gift that is, that when we can be agents to help our spouse or friend, I mean, just whomever that we're in a good relationship with, to reframe something we hear them saying. To me, man, that's some of the greatest moments of encouragement that I can receive. I mean, again, the gift you gave me on the whole fitness moment, you know, just being able to reframe it and go, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I am doing something about this. Wait a minute. I can move forward. What a gift that is that you're able to give her and Jen's able to give you at times too.
Yeah, it is. It's just context.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I think about reframe, the only other thing I thought about is as we've been sitting here, went through my mind, if I can remember what it was. Oh, I think one of the things I love about the idea of trying to take a situation of, you know, brokenness, disappointment, failure, whatever, and reframing it is it, to me, this is where the whole faith world becomes something that's really can be really rich, but it's not what I feel like is being talked about nearly enough that the way I understand God is that God is constantly in the business of reframing our ugliest moments, you know, that no matter what we've done, he's just going, I got this, you know, my grace is big enough, you know? And I think sometimes our friends who, you know, who maybe aren't in that faith journey or in the church world, maybe they just look and they just go, Mike, you guys feel like you always have to keep it all together and have it all together. And you always want to look perfect. And to me, that's always been one of the greatest affronts. If somebody can't see that, man, I'm struggling as much as you are, fill in the blank with whatever the topic is. But I've got my own struggle. It's that quote we talk about. We all have a battle, you know, nothing about that we're fighting,
right.
You know?
Right.
And I think reframing for me even helps me, you know, as a pretty simple man of faith, of just being able to go, yeah, man, I did mess up and I need to make this right with my wife. But thank heavens, I don't have to live in a constant state of shame. It's not the final word about me and about who I am.
One of the things in that world, I think that you and I have talked about a lot over the years, especially with our other two guys, Jen and I have tried to hash this out different times, is I think one of the reasons I wonder if one of the reasons mm-hmm. why we hold on to the old frame in that kind of faith world is control.
Yeah.
I think so much, and talking to people and realizing, I won't use other people, I'll say in my own life, I think I thought or think that I control way more than I do. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, if I have a bad frame as a parent,
yeah,
and my kid consequently does something stupid, that's on me.
Yeah.
Cause I did this. Now, you know, I think some people that know me would say, I don't know that you worry about that a lot, but I keep the control part hidden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it is a part of me, even though people don't think that's part of me, but it is. I try to do a lot of behind the scenes controlling and manipulating and that's an ugly part. That's an ugly frame.
Yeah.
But, the idea that we control the outcome so mm-hmm. much, I think drives us to, keep the old frame.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that delusion of control.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
If I work hard enough, if I keep working this old frame, if I keep polishing and shining, it's going to look pretty one day.
Yeah. Cause I don't want to think about what the outcome could be or what the other thing could be.
Yeah.
And so, two things might be true. Maybe my kids went off the rails and I was a pretty good parent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe my marriage dissolved and I really don't know what I could do better.
Yeah.
Or a business failed and maybe that's right where God wanted you.
Right, right. Kind of reminds me of that very first podcast we did that we never released on Paradox.
Paradox.
You know, and I think one of the quotes we talk about in there is, you know, Brennan Manning, you know, he said, I'm an angel with an incredible capacity for beer.
Yeah.
You know, that feels like those don't go together, but rather it's being able to go, no, they both are true about who I am. And sometimes I can get locked on only one half of that. And in those moments, that's where I would need to reframe. I need to go, no, I need to embrace the truth of who I am. G.K. Chesterton said just a really short phrase that we are all glorious ruins. I love that same phrase. You know, man, there's something really awesome and filled with dignity about who I am. And I'm a flipping mess. Again, kind of like I said earlier, the danger comes when I only want to be glorious or I only want to be a ruin. I have to reframe in those moments. I have to just own the totality of who I am.
That's a great way to say it, the totality. And to live whatever repercussions come from that, they just come.
Yeah.
And, you know, we joke about this all the time, but I do have a zest for parts of life, eating, drinking, just enjoying a good time.
Yep.
And, you know, I have to be careful of that mm-hmm. because I know I have an addictive personality.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't need to be an everyday part of my life.
Right.
I know that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not at the point where I'm going to probably put it down altogether.
Yeah.
And this weekend, my wife's family's coming, so my two brother-in-laws will be there, mm-hmm. and we'll have a great time, and we'll laugh, and we'll stand on the deck, and be on the grill and be drinking beer.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you could interpret that and say, oh gosh, I don't want people who, you know, might look up to Steve to think that's okay based on their background or, you know, I don't want them to, afraid of, you know, enjoying a good time either. So there's, you know, but I've got to, it's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to live with that. And I think I try to live with that in moderation. And sometimes I do better than others. But mm-hmm. it's that yin and yang of enjoying life and going, hey, this is a regular Tuesday night, and you know, this just needs to be a quiet evening at home. And that's okay too.
And I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
reframing gave us a good chunk of conversation to have.
I did. That's an interesting word. I don't know that I'd ever heard. I don't think I'd ever heard that.
Yeah. I think the first time I ever used it, I think I know where I was. I was in Southern California, with a buddy who had moved out there, Jeremy, and we were walking on the beach talking, and he said something. I don't remember what I have no idea what we're talking about. And I said, well, yeah, maybe. And he goes, there you go again. I said, what? He goes, that's like your word. I said, what do you mean it's my word? He goes, you do this to me all the time. He goes, I'll be telling you something I'm trying to figure out, and instead of agreeing with me or commiserating with me or telling me that, well, yeah, you're right, that's the way it is, you'll just go, well, maybe. And I go, I do? Like, really, truly unaware. He says, yeah, you'll say maybe, and then you'll offer me, well, Jeremy, but what if it's this? And offer a different perspective to it. And he said, I think in those moments, you start reframing the way I'm thinking. I remember thinking, ooh, reframe. I kind of like that.
I like that.
And I think I've started watching myself and realizing, to a fault, I can always see two sides of a situation. If I'm not careful, I'll get paralyzed by seeing that too much. But for the most part, I love that about how my brain works, that when I hear a story of brokenness or pain or hurt, to me, it's never the last word.
I think that's, you said something about my superpower last time. I think that's your superpower. I've never thought about it in the terms of reframing, but nothing's as bad as you think it is. And there, maybe that's not a good way to say it, because there are some tragic things that have happened. And I don't mean to belittle that at all, but there's always hope for something redemptive, even in tragedies. And so when you say that, I think most of the time you mean, hey, something we've done, not something that's happened to us.
Right.
We've done that we regret, wish we hadn't done.
Yeah.
There's another side.
Yeah.
There's always hope.
Yeah. Well, and
those things don't shock God.
Right. I'm going to go out on some thin ice for just a second, but
oh man,
I think even sometimes the things that happen to us, not the bad choices we've made, I think there's part of our growth through those horrible moments in our life. I'm thinking like abuse and horrible things that happen. Part of our growth is when we begin to reframe what happened, not ignoring it, not denying it, not minimizing it, but reframe it, and that there really was purpose even in this horrific evil and suffering. That's hard to get our arms around. But, there's a story, and if you've ever been to Broadway and you're seeing Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, you know the story of Joseph. It's an old Jewish story from, thousands of years ago. And Joseph is this son of a guy who has 12 kids, and he's the favorite boy, and 11 of them hate him. And so what they do, they sell him to they sell him off to some trade people, and he's gone. And he's gone from, tell the old man, oh, he fell in a pit and died, And so it's an incredible story. But later in his life, this kid who's been so betrayed by his siblings rises to power in Egypt, and he becomes, second most powerful person in all of Egypt. And when this famine comes through the land, lo and behold, one day his father and 11 brothers show up begging for money from the Egyptian government, metaphorically speaking.
Right.
And they don't recognize that, oh my gosh, this is the brother that we've been lying about all these years. And there's this beautiful encounter of how there's restoration that happens between all of them. But at the end of this crazy story, Joseph looks at his brothers and he just says this, what you intended for evil, God intended for good. And that's one of those phrases, whether you're a person of faith or not, it's just like, whoa, wait, what? That there really can be a reframing of something that was horrible that happens, but that out of it, there's life lessons, there's growth, there's healing, there's a way to live through that. So I think reframing is part of the human condition of how we survive the human condition sometime, of being able to look at, again, you're right, the majority of what I'm talking about, the dumb choices we make, but even sometimes the horrible things that happen to us. How do I get up the next morning and get out of bed and move forward when my infant child dies of SIDS? That's just a horrible moment.
Unthinkable.
It is. And you and I both know somebody who's navigated that road.
Yes.
And who has used that and reframed it in a way that's beautiful. doesn't minimize the loss ever.
The scar will always be there.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, that's good.
All right. Well, it's about dinner time for me.
What was it, like 4:30?
Yeah. I eat with the blue hair special now. No, I'm eating Sarah and Laura, and we're going out for dinner because our house is overtaken tonight by Jacob and his family and three or four couples that they like to hang out with. And our house is kind of central for all of them. So they gather there every now and again on a Tuesday night, and they have a lot of little kids, so we disappear.
Smart. Where are you going for dinner?
I don't know. The girls are deciding.
Oh.
But it's a salad for me wherever we go tonight.
Oh, gosh. That's terrible.
It is terrible, but I'm making up for a glorious Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Getting back on my stuff. I'm reframing my bad
weekend. You are reframing your bad weekend. Yeah.
All right.
See you soon.
Bye.